Our guest tonight is 26-year-old Phil Hutchins, the new national chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He says the time is now past for the black militant to be just angry. Now he has to be smart at the same time. Phil Hutchins is standing by in New Jersey to answer your questions and share your comments as well as your conversation about the new black militancy. You may speak to him direct at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you're welcome to call us collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. For our listeners in Colorado, Montana, New Mexico, Texas, as well as the West Coast, you may call us at our special Western Regional number, and that's area code 212-749-3357. That's Western calls if you want to be assured of getting to us direct. Area code 212-749-3357. And in the New York area, please call us at 866-5010. That's local calls on 866-5010. Mr. Hutchins, good evening, sir.
How are you, sir?
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll begin our conversation tonight with this question. What do you mean when you say the black man today has to be smart as well as angry?
Well, what we tried to say was just that we think it's impossible in this day and age, in the 20th century, in a very technological country, to talk about change purely on an emotional basis. We understand that the black man has lots of reasons to be mad, and justifiably so. But it's our position that you also have to understand your enemy, know his strengths, his weaknesses, know your strengths, know your weaknesses, and begin to build a strategy for how to deal with your opponent. And that takes a little thinking, and that you have to be able to couple the best parts of your anger along with what you can do to try and outsmart your enemy at the same time. And that's especially true if you're in a situation where you're in the minority and your enemy is in the majority. You have to pursue the politics of divide and conquer, and also to be able to get your enemy or your opponent into a position which is not very possible for him to fight against you to his maximum ability, which begins to get you the kind of program that you want over and begins to draw as many people in your camp as possible and as few people in his camp as possible.
Mr. Hutchins, who is the enemy?
Well, Smith says that the enemy is a white racist power structure in the United States, that it is represented by the United States government, it is represented by the economic concentration and corporations of this country, is represented by the various racist public officials in this country, and it is also represented by the millions of people, especially white people in the country, who uphold and who sympathize with the government and who are indoctrinated by the racist ideology of the United States of America against black people and colored people all over the world.
When we hear the term whitey, and when we hear it used in the context that whitey is the enemy or whitey is against us, is this phrase being used to describe all white people, or is it being used to describe only some white people?
Well, I think it's being it was designed to talk about white people in general, and that it is not, for instance, that descriptive. I mean, it talks about white people, and we know that, for instance, white people keep us down, but we also understand that not all white people have power, even though most white people are more inclined to have practically any kind of power than black people. But that the white people who are in the power structure, the mayors, the businessmen, the people who are at the upper levels of the society, are the ones who are really very much the part of the power structure. One of the things that we've learned through our research into the whole part of economic concentration of the United States is that fewer and fewer people control more and more wealth, and that has become a growing tendency in this country for there to be mass consolidation at the top of the economic structure, and that what you really have is maybe 400 or 500 families, and along with a few economic combinations, corporations like U.S. Steel, AT&T, General Motors, who really run the country. And that's what you're really talking about, because when you're talking about confronting white power, you're necessarily all white people in general. The problem is that the culture of the country is racist, and it affects all people. And white people, practically all white people, identify with that culture, which is very racist and works against black people. That's why it's always been very possible in this country to use poor whites against poor blacks, and that's poor whites will be willing to fight poor blacks on the basis of their white skin, as if they think that will actually get them someplace. In this country, that's happened in Reconstruction, happened around the New Deal, and it's happening even now in the so-called white backlash, where you have poor whites who basically have not made it, and will probably never make it, but still they think that they could make it by keeping poor black people down. And they're the people who uphold the racist philosophy of the country, even though they're not getting anything out of it.
Well, most of the fear that's being raised today, and much of the fear that we see that's being projected in terms of the turn or the switch to the right, much of this comes from an emotional factor that a lot of whites seem to be afraid. Now, I'm concerned about the white man or the white woman, the white human being, the white individual who feels kindly towards the black people, who is thinking in terms of perhaps the country is not all that it should be and perhaps wants to even help in some way. But he turns away because he feels that when we address him as whitey, that we're saying to him that he is also a part of this establishment that controls. What do you say to this kind of person?
Well, what has happened, I think, because once again, the way the culture of the country is, which is a white culture, that even the people who want to help us, supposedly help us in quotations, usually are more white than they are liberal. Or the people who are from the so-called left or radical organizations are usually more white than they are left or are radical. And when really confronted around the whole question of racism, they identify first with white people above the various cause that they're supposedly going to help. And therefore, become very, very turned off, because deep down, they still believe in some type of white supremacy. And therefore, they find that what they're really trying to do is that they're trying to help the so-called black people or help Negroes. But they're basically trying to help Negroes become like white people, even though they rarely say that. And that is one of the things that black power has tried to address itself to, is that black people have to begin to define their own needs, define what their own program should be, and also to try to say who are our friends, our real friends, and who are not, and that we choose them and not let the friends choose us. And what's happened is that a lot of white people are not able to stand for that. It's like the white people who were able to support the struggle while SNCC and other civil rights organizations were in the South. And when the struggle became much closer to home in the North, around housing segregation, around welfare, around poverty, and around racism at all levels of the country, they began to just flip out because it came much too close to them and to their whole reality. And it's something very bad to say that America is not only like Mississippi, but America is like Baltimore, it's like Cleveland, and it's like Kansas City, and like a whole lot of northern and western cities, and basically that's what's wrong with it, that power works bad everywhere, not just in the South, which is supposedly some kind of outcast part of the country, but it's racist, and it keeps people down economically all over the country. And a lot of white people are not ready for that kind of revolution, and that they find it very hard to either sympathize or even begin to put themselves into a situation where they really can talk about black liberation, because it means the destruction of their whole system of values, and most white people are not ready for that.
Mr. Hutchins, we're going to ask our night call listeners to join us. We have calls standing by in Helena, Montana, Atlanta, Georgia, as well as New York. And just a reminder to our listeners once again, tonight we're discussing the new black militancy, Angry But Smart. And our guest tonight calling in from New Jersey is Mr. Phil Hutchins, who is the new national chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and more popularly known as SNCC. Our telephone number is once again area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. If you're calling in from the West Coast, you may call us at area code 212-749-3357. And, of course, in New York City, 866-5010. We'll take our first call from Mr. Colvin, who's calling in from Helena, Montana, and he's hearing night call over KCAT AM. Mr. Colvin?
Yes?
Good evening, sir.
What I can hear what was being said on the radio station, so it's just that a lot of people that I've discussed black militancy where we don't have any real examples of it up here have said that they felt that the Negroes, because they've been suppressed for so long, have developed sort of a subconscious inferiority complex, and that this is one reason that to sort of cover up this and try and overcome it, that they've developed these like riots and black power and black supremacy, and that until they overcome this and down inside feel that they are equal to the whites, so that they don't have to act superior to them, that they will be able to get along with them as well, if you can understand that.
Mr. Hutchins, what is your response?
Say what?
Well, what we think in SNCC is that the struggle is no longer for necessarily equality, in that the black people in the country are not trying to wage a struggle for black liberation simply to be equal to what we see as a very, very decadent white middle class society. I mean, we're not trying to push black people into the mainstream of the United States of America. I mean, we're not trying to get black people to the point where they can be so sophisticated and middle class that they can sit around and do the kinds of things that, say, the United States is doing in Vietnam. I mean, we're not pushing that kind of equality. And that we're engaged in an entirely different program to find what we call black humanism, a new black ethic, to begin a kind of cultural regeneration of values, even from the time of Africa to the present, that begins to say, you know, what happened? You know, what is the black man? What is he doing here? What is his history? And how is that relevant to where he is now? And how should he move on that? I mean, it's our feeling that the United States of America, which and other white Western countries, have never been able to deal very honestly on the whole question of color, to whether you're talking about the American Indian, the Japanese American, the Chinese, or you're talking about the African, or people in Latin America. And that,
Mr. Hutchins, in an area where there aren't many black people, or where the confrontation between white and black is not necessarily on the level that you find in your more urban areas, and if whites feel that the reason for this new black militancy is inferiority on the parts of blacks, what answer do you really give them? I mean, and is their feeling, or are their feelings different than the feelings of those where there is a more pronounced confrontation?
I don't think the feelings are any different, and I think what has shown that very well were the rebellions, especially last summer, where you had rebellions all over the country, and especially in a whole lot of places where people never would have expected rebellions, small field, New Jersey, or places out in the Midwest, the far west, where we didn't even know we had, you know, concentrations of black people, and you find out that there aren't very many, but that wherever there are black people, that there is a condition of racism that pervades the entire country that black people are up in arms about, and that that could be true in Montana or in New York City, and that the real position of how many people there are in terms of numbers is not that important. It's that the treatment and the racism, some places is more subtle than other places, but it's still there. And I think that's what black people in the country are really moving against, whether, as I said, they're in a place where they have a lot of black people, like, say, New York City or Chicago, or in some place where it's very, very small, like maybe some small town like Plainfield, New Jersey.
Mr. Colvin, in your question, you mentioned that there are people who feel this way. Do you feel personally that blacks are inferior or have a feeling of inferiority, and this is why they have called upon a new black militant spirit?
I can understand your question that well, but I think I got the
Is this your personal feeling?
That there's a basic inferiority.
Right.
Complex? I think that a lot, that there's somewhat of one, because I feel that when a race has been put down and made to feel that they're less and had this ingrown in them, that they're going to have this background, that they'll get over it, and that they'll, and that they are getting over it right now, but that right now there's usually a tendency in a person that wants to express himself and doesn't quite have the confidence, because he hasn't been able to before, to overexpress himself and to try and put up the air that he is superior. And I just like to ask one more quick question, would that be all right?
Yes, you may.
Do you feel that the racial situation will improve much more when the younger generation is in power, because they seem right now to be a more questioning generation. They've been raised in an environment with more stimulus, in a more open-minded environment, and it seems like they're questioning more things, they're accepting more things, not just from somebody says it, so they accept it. They're accepting it more on their own reason, and I think that they probably would be more willing to accept the Negro as an equal than this.
Well, I don't think that Mr. Hutchins can give us a quick answer on that, so we're going to ask him to hold back until after station identification. Mr. Colvin, okay. Thank you so much for calling. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Phil Hutchins, right after station identification.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Phil Hutchins after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call to Phil Hutchins about the new black militancy. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. Phil Hutchins, and just before we take our next call from New York City, we're going to ask Mr. Hutchins if he'll give us a brief response to Mr. Colvin's questions in reference to the youth of the country.
Well, my only feeling about that is that the answer is both yes and no. I mean, I think that there are certain currents running through the country that make for a more liberalization among youth, both black and white, than there was in the past. But, I mean, what I feel is just that people for centuries have always said the youth are going to be the ones who save us out. Just wait, you know, and the youth will be better. That becomes a kind of solution in itself, and I don't think black people are willing to wait for another generation, and also to wait on a youth that could well, perhaps right now, tends to have a kind of liberal rebellion running through them, both black and white, that they're going to wait for a youth, especially a white youth, that could turn fascist if there's a real change of climate in the country. And what we're saying is that it's this generation of young black men and young black women who are going to make the fight to get black dignity and black power in the country, and that if this generation has to be wiped out to make that fight, that we're willing to put ourselves on the line. And I think that's very important. We aren't willing to wait, but the black people, especially even the younger people who are younger than I am, high school kids, are extremely militant and are not beginning to take the kind of things that we took, and that our generation was considered much more radical and much more militant than our parents and grandparents were, and that I think the pace is going to quicken in the black community, and that it's not going to slacken a bit, and that the young black generation, which is the high school generation, which is first beginning right now in their various confrontations around the country, like high school rebellions and things, to work up against the police and the power structure, is going to be very, very sophisticated and very, very militant, and that they aren't going to wait. They're going to move now and also commit this generation even more than it is to the struggle for black liberation.
Mr. Hutchins, we'll take our next call from New York City. Mr. Nicelaus is hearing Night Call over WRVR-FM. Mr. Nicelaus?
Mr. Shields.
How are you, sir?
All right. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
I'd like to address a question to Mr. Hutchins, if I may. Mr. Hutchins, does SNCC still stand on that newsletter of last year attacking Zionism in the State of Israel?
We feel that the factual information we did in terms of research on the question of Israel still stands. We feel it is very
very ironic that SNCC was accused of anti-Semitism in the whole question of Israel, and that it was our thing, and it was impossible since both the Arabs and the Israelis are, or the Jews there are, both Semitic people, that it was impossible to be considered anti-Semitic, because you couldn't, I mean, since both groups of people are Semitic, and that it's very unfortunate, at least it's my opinion, that it's almost impossible to find very many people in this country who are willing to be able to have a very rational discussion about that. We think that the events of the past year have worn out a lot of what we said about the nature of Israel and how Israel was moving, and the kind of offensive, defensive that practices that the state of Israel uses to supposedly secure their own boundaries. And as we said before, we think that the real agitation in the Middle East comes because the Arab countries, which have the majority of the population, feel that Israel is pretty much just a Western or a base in the Middle East.
I see. Well, you're aware of the fact that the King of Saudi Arabia has his usual custom when he comes here is, for example, when he did the last time he visited the Chase Manhattan Bank, against which I believe SNCC has carried on some actions. I think you're aware as well that the Arabian American Oil Company, which is a subsidiary of the Standard Oil of New Jersey, which also has investments in South Africa, has rather heavy investments in Saudi Arabia. Also, there is a U.S. military base there, as there is in Kuwait. Do you feel it's a funny kind of national liberation struggle, which is basically financed by the Arabian American Oil Company, which has its investments in South Africa? And I'd like to ask you as well just how you define Israel. What is...
Mr. Nicelaus, I hope I'm not going to put my head in a noose on this thing, but I am very much aware of the extreme emotionalism of this particular subject. But tonight we are addressing our discussion to the new black militancy, whether blacks should be angry or smart. And I think that if we could keep our questions within that arena, and perhaps at another time we might be able to have Mr. Hutchins back or perhaps a member of SNCC to discuss this very, very important question. But I would prefer to leave it in that arena of the black militancy.
All right.
With your permission.
All right. That's perfectly all right, Mr. Shields.
Thank you, sir. Well, it is of great importance to all of us at this point, and I don't want you to think that we are just pushing it aside.
No.
But, we only have an hour to discuss one particular subject, and we have people, standing by, ready to call in on this particular subject, which is black militancy.
All right. Well,
and if you have a question in that area, I'd appreciate if you'd address it, sir.
Additional, very short question. Mr. Hutchings has proceeded on the premise that black militants should be both angry and smart. Well, they have very good reason to be angry. But if they are going to be smart, don't you think it's advisable that they inform themselves on these topics, such as this particular matter, for a really effective militancy? Otherwise, whether willy-nilly, whether they like it or not, they will simply be pouring oil on the flames of a backlash which is already there and which will be basically counterproductive from their own standpoint. I mean, don't you feel that's a relevant question, Mr. Shields?
I certainly do, and I'm going to ask Mr. Hutchins if he would respond.
Sure, I think that you're right. I mean, that it's very important to do that, and I think one of the things that SNCC historically has done, for instance, before SNCC issued their statement on Israel last year, is that there was some scholarship and there was some research that was done to it, and it wasn't just something that hit us on the top of the head at the moment that we made the statement, because we felt it was a very, very important question and a very, very explosive question and emotional one, and that we knew that the minute we opened our mouth and said it, that the people would attack us, and so we felt it was very, very important to have some knowledge behind it. Now, I think it's very possible for you to say, well, our knowledge or whatever facts we have are incorrect, and that to try to use various examples to destroy the argument. My only position here is just that perhaps the Arabs are not necessarily always the progressive force that some people tend to imply that they are, and that's probably very, very true. It's just that you don't begin to dismiss the problems of Israel and the weaknesses of Israel by talking about the Arabs. I mean, two wrongs don't necessarily make a right.
Agreed on that point. All right, Mr. Hutchings, I'll conclude, but may I make you a sort of sporting proposition? May I send you a particular piece of literature giving the other side of the topic, and do I have, in effect, a sort of gentleman's agreement that you'll try to take some time to read it?
Sure, we get information from all over. You can mail it to SNCC at 100 Fifth Avenue, Suite 803.
All right, I'll send it out to care of yourself. Thank you very much, sir.
Surely, thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Shields.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember, you may call us collect. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. And on the West Coast, as well as Montana, Colorado, and New Mexico, Texas, you may call us at area code 212-749-3357. Mr. Hutchins, possibly the one man in this country who has received more publicity than any other black leader or any other black spokesman has been Mr. Stokely Carmichael, who was formerly associated with SNCC, and the story has come out that Mr. Stokely was terminated by the Central Committee of the organization. Could you give us any background on this or the reasons why Mr. Stokely or Mr. Carmichael, rather, is no longer associated?
Right. I'm not at liberty to tell too much of the background just because it relates to the inner workings of the organization. What I could say to try and go a little bit farther than our press statement did was just that the organization, SNCC, was attempting to pull together on a lot of fronts, both political and organizational, on some of the work it's done for the past 2 years. And it was very, very necessary to establish some type of organizational discipline and some type of organizational togetherness on projects, on program priorities, and on a whole lot of things around that level. And what happened basically is that Brother Carmichael had his own set of priorities and his own agenda for things that should happen, which were not necessarily felt by the majority of the Central Committee of the organization, or by that matter, by the whole staff. And that there were many projects that the brother was working on, Carmichael that is, that were not SNCC projects and which SNCC didn't want to necessarily be a part of. And what happened is that everywhere Brother Carmichael went, that people saw him working for SNCC, and that we tried to reach some agreement about that, or at least some possibility where we could find out and discuss the nature of some of those involvements, because people saw them not only as involvements of Stokely Carmichael, but involvements of the organization. And we were not able to get any kind of agreeable response to that. And so that the majority of the organization felt that if we were going to continually to be involved with projects and various programs, which the organization had not discussed, had not talked about, and had not approved, simply because of one individual, no matter how prominent or that person might be, that it was basically disruptive, and that it threatened the security of the organization to have a person, no matter, once again, how strong on leadership, who basically was not in the current leadership of the organization by his own choice.
Mr. Hutchins, we'll return with more questions and more phone calls after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Phil Hutchings after station identification.
What do I really want? Well, the same things any man wants, black or white. I want a decent job. The same chance as any man to better myself, to get ahead. I want a home my wife won't be ashamed of. I want our kids to grow up as proud of being black as of being American. I want to be able to give them what they want, and maybe a little extra. If I don't get all the things I want, it should be because I failed, pure and simple. Not because I'm black. I want nothing more than anyone else, but nothing less either.
It isn't easy to get by in the city these days, for blacks or whites. Our cities need help, your help. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder. Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call to Phil Hutchings about the new black militancy. Again, Del Shields.
And to the Night Call stations joining us for the second half hour, we would like to mention to those stations that as of tonight, we have added 10 more stations, giving us a total of 71 stations where Night Call is being carried in more than 61 cities plus the District of Columbia. So thanks to you, the Night Call network is growing. Tonight, Phil Hutchins, who is with SNCC, and we're talking tonight about the new black militancy, Be Smart or Be Angry. And we'll take our next call during this hour from Mr. Wilson, who's hearing Night Call over WAOK in Atlanta, Georgia. Mr. Wilson, good evening, sir.
Hello, Brother Shields. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Just fine. I'd like to ask Brother Hutchins a couple of questions. With the new trend that SNCC is going through, with your black awareness program, and with you telling black folks that that they should go out and destroy this monster, meaning America, any way in which they can. How has this affected your organization financially? And, is there anything that we, black and white folks who agree with your position, that we can do financially to help your organization?
Hello? Right. What I think has happened is just that as SNCC has become more militant, more radical, that, of course, we've lost money. We lost money with our statement. When we became the first civil rights organization back in 1965 to oppose the war in Vietnam, which now is very much the current thing to do. We lost money, of course, on our position on the whole question of the Middle East, which is one of the phone calls this evening shows that turned off a whole lot of people. But it's never been our thing that money should dictate, exactly where our policy is, and that SNCC has maintained the right to make political regardless of the financial cost. However, SNCC at the same time definitely still does need money. I mean, there is a repression in the country going down against black militants. Right now in the state of Texas, we have over 45 people who are in jail on trumped-up charges in Dallas, in Houston, in Austin, and in Killeen, Texas. And that Governor Connolly is moving to rid the state of so-called black agitators in Texas, and that we have people, for instance, Leotis Johnson in Houston, Texas, who got a 30-year sentence simply for the supposed possession of marijuana. Or you have our Dallas chairman of SNCC, Ernest McMillan, who got a 10-year sentence for supposedly throwing a rock in somebody's window. Now, practically all those people will probably be able to get out, but what happens is that the power structure is very, very shrewd. They know if they can get you to spend a whole lot of your money and a whole lot of your time trying to get people out of jail, paying lawyers' court stenographers' fees, and this kind of thing, that it begins to bankrupt your treasury and begins to hurt your movement. We have people in California who have been in jail. When I went out to St. Louis, Missouri just last weekend to speak for a local group there called the Black Liberators, under Prime Minister Charles Cohen, I was arrested and put in jail for 5 days and sent to the St. Louis workhouse for supposedly a charge they call unlawful assembly. And we had to raise a cash bond to get out because the mayor of St. Louis, Mayor Savanes, and the police department told bondsmen that they better not touch us, and that if anyone was going to even think of trying to bond us out, that they wouldn't be a bondsman in St. Louis. So you have all that kind of political pressure going on all over the country. You have Rap Brown, who is still a political prisoner in New York State, and whose trial will probably come up sometime this year for supposedly, allegedly trying to start some kind of riot in Cambridge, Maryland. And that you have in SNCC, as well as in other black organizations, a whole lot of black people who are currently faced with repression, arrest, and some types of intimidation and harassment simply because they're trying to evoke a very positive program of liberation within the black parts of the country. And one of the things that we've tried to do is set up a SNCC Defense Fund, which is based both in Atlanta, Georgia, at 360 Nelson Street, southwest Atlanta, Georgia, where we're asking people who either believe in the program of SNCC and who sympathize with some of our goals and aims, and people who think that even if they disagree with some of the positions that SNCC takes, are for pushing dissent in this country, that SNCC basically is, based on its history and even in the present, is still the only radical black organization that is nationwide and that can push that. And so we ask for support, but that we always try and make clear that any kind of monetary support that is given to SNCC doesn't influence our policies in the slightest, and that the Central Committee and that the staff of the Coordinating Committee reserve the right to make their own political decisions.
I see where your organization, as it becomes more militant, the power structure in this country speaks more and more about law and order and preserving law and order. Where I can see, say, in 62 and 63 are the early years of SNCC and other organizations, where you were going throughout communities virtually getting your head beaten off, and in some cases, that is exactly what was happening. People were being shot, killed on the Meredith March, people on the Selma to Montgomery March. There was no talk from, say, the President of the United States, Vice President Humphrey, as he said just tonight, that we have to stop the H-Rap Browns and the Stokely Carmichaels of America. There was nothing about this being done then. How do you expect SNCC and black people in this country to move to counteract this type of action by the part of the power structure in America?
Well, we think that, one is that we entirely agree with what you just said, and two is just that we think that saying law and order is the polite way nowadays to say nigger in this country, and that people who simply talk about law and order, like Vice President Humphrey and those cats who are running for president, you know, will never get around to talking about justice. They're going to talk about law and order all the time. And so what black people have to begin to do is to understand the political situation, which means that first that they should boycott the election, that there's nobody worth voting for this year, Democrat, Republican, and that they should begin to work towards building their own black political party on a nationwide basis. At the same time, that as the repression gets stronger, which will not only hit militants, it hits everybody, and that one of the things that the last 3 or 4 years has proven is that when the white power structure gets angry, especially the cops, is they don't distinguish between black militants and black moderates or black conservatives. They come down on everybody that's black, and that draws people together. And that we've begun to push in many communities around the country the whole idea of what we call United Black Fronts, which draw all elements and segments of the black areas together on a political line where they can begin to sit down and talk to each other and begin to work out programs for the black community, and where each force is legitimate, not necessarily correct, but each force is legitimate within that coalition of the black front, which is basically talking from what we call a black perspective, or at least a black background.
Mr. Wilson, we want to thank you so much for calling.
I enjoyed being on your program. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our guest is Mr. Phil Hutchins of SNCC, and we're discussing the new black militancy, Angry But Smart. This time we'll go to Tampa, Florida, where Mr. Jones is hearing Night Call of WFLA in Tampa. Mr. Jones, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. I had a question for your guest.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to know how does he compare SNCC with the KKK?
Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I heard it. Well, I think there's no comparison at all. I mean, SNCC is a political organization that is moving in the black community to try to get black power and black strength. within the country, which we think is an entirely democratic and right thing to do. The Ku Klux Klan is an organization which is not really political in a lot of ways, but which basically is an organization which has had a history, especially in the South and other parts of the country, of murder, of rape, of pillage, and of scare tactics, harassment against the what we call the very legitimate needs of black people, and that there's just no connection at all. The Ku Klux Klan is a white hate organization that brings out all the worst parts of what the country is all about. And the real unfortunate is that the country has never moved strongly against the KKK mentality. I don't necessarily just mean the organization, but it still supports the kind of things that it's done. And especially in the South, that's been true. But I mean, since 1954, when you had your supposedly hand-down Supreme Court decision which outlawed segregation, the South is still, in many cases, the same way it was once you get out of the central cities over 10, 12 years ago. And that the whole mentality of the KKK, the fear that's instilled in both the black and white communities against any kind of progress is an entirely different kind of thing than what Snick is trying to do.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Hello.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. And you may call and collect, and of course we welcome your calls and your comments tonight with our guest, Mr. Phil Hutchins of SNCC. We'll take our next call from New Orleans. Mr. Savory is hearing Night Call over WDSU. Mr. Savory, good evening, sir.
Thank you. And historically, some of these problems take decades or generations or centuries or thousands of years to resolve. The third and fourth generation period is mentioned as one of the Ten Commandments. But this militancy results today from each of us trying to do in a few months or years what may take decades or generations. And we're not going to take that long to solve our problems, which is understandable. So let us pray that we can accelerate peace amongst all mankind during the next few hours or days or weeks, because we have got a war on poverty and a war involving races and a war involving Vietnam and a war against communism and a war against inflation and a lot of other wars. Going on. It's pretty complex locally and globally, and it's a long-range problem, and all each of us can do is our little bit every day, like Boy Scouts, to expedite and accelerate peace within ourselves individually, in our families, and in our cities and states and our nations, and between the races, because there is an or else factor hanging over our heads like the sword of Damocles, locally and globally. Two swords, really, the bomb and communism. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. Our next call is from Iowa City. Mr. Schmidt is hearing Night Call over WSUI. Mr. Schmidt, good evening, sir.
So I'd like to ask Mr. Hutchins, what is his position and or SNCC position on the possibility of coalitions with white radicals, and the corollary to that, what would his advice be to white people who are avowedly anti-system?
Mr. Schmidt and Mr. Hutchins, I'm going to ask if you'd be kind enough to hold on while we alert our stations down the line. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Phil Hutchins after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call. Just about a year has passed since the publication of a book called Death at an Early Age. In it, author Jonathan Kozol charged the Boston School Committee and the system they run with the spiritual and educational murder of the black youngsters in their schools. Kozol's indictment of Boston has been picked up by other critics and applied to most of our other urban ghetto school systems across the country. Has anything really changed in the past year? Do black youngsters still face spiritual and psychological death at an early age in most of our urban school systems? Jonathan Kozol says, unhappily, that yes, they do. You speak for yourself and ask him direct questions about what he feels must be done. Death at an Early Age, the Spiritual and Psychological Murder of Black Youngsters by Our Public School Systems, with author Jonathan Kozol, tomorrow night on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call to Phil Hutchings about the new black militancy. Again, Del Shields.
Mr. Hutchins, we are back again, and Mr. Schmidt was calling in from Iowa City. Now, your response, Mr. Hutchins, to the possibility of a coalition between blacks and the white radicals.
Right. It's our feeling, and we said that back in 1966 when SNCC first endorsed the idea of black power, that white people who felt that they saw and understood the problems facing America should work in the white community where the real racism was. And that when there would be a white political force that was sufficiently radical and moving in a generally progressive direction, that we could begin to talk about the possibility or the feasibility of some coalitions. We said then, and we say now, that we still don't see that force emerging in the white in different white parts of the country. However, I would say that the fight of SNCC is against what we call white supremacy, as opposed to white skins, and that there is a difference in that, and that we would encourage white people to support to work on several levels. First is that if they believe in the positions and the ideals of SNCC, I think that they should help by giving us money, because for reasons that I mentioned, especially in terms of harassment and the whole legal situation around jailings and things, that SNCC does need money, and that there's an attempt by the power structure to break the SNCC treasury simply on harassment things and things which are wholly trumped up, and that try to keep us from our real program and things that we have to respond to, like getting our people out of jail. And so there's a need for money on that level. On the second level, as far as working in the white community, I think if people are young, that perhaps one of the best organizations within the white community to do a type of radical work is Students for a Democratic Society. SNCC doesn't necessarily agree with SDS on their whole political program or even their whole political direction, but we think that SDS is playing a very strong role in the white community in creating dissent, which in many ways creates a kind of buffer role against black militants and black radicals, in the sense that the white power structure, when it comes time for repression, has to come down on both white radicals and black radicals, and they usually come down on the white radicals first in order to prepare the way for the move against black militant organizations. A good example of that is Dr. Spock and the Vietnam peace marches. So we think if people are older and want to work in the white community, there are certain organizations like the Southern Conference Educational Fund, which works basically in the South, and various new independent political groups in places like Chicago or other places of the North and the West also, which are beginning to talk about a new type of politics, a radical type of politics, which are an alternative to the present system. We don't see any of those as being revolutionary, but for white people, they are beginning to pose for the first time new questions and new possibilities, which we think is an important step forward. And so we would encourage that kind of dissent in the white community, and we would encourage white radicals or white reformists or white liberals to begin to work in those directions with those types of organizations.
Mr. Schmidt, thank you so much for calling.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Our guest tonight, Mr. Phil Hutchins, and this time we'll take a local call from New York. Mr. Gordon is here in Night Call over WWRL. Mr. Gordon, good evening, sir.
Good evening. Mr. Hutchins, I was wondering if you could comment on the political suppression and arrest of SNCC workers that I read about in Dallas and Houston, Texas.
Well, what we said there were is that we have about 40 to 45 people in jail in four cities in Texas, in Houston, Dallas, Killeen, and Austin, and that until very recently, and in fact, in some ways, a whole lot of the situation was confused. We were unable to get a lot of the factual information, and so we sent a couple of people from the national organization into Texas to do some field work at the same time, to send various lawyers to to get them various legal support because some of the people had been unable to obtain any legal assistance in Texas. And that I mentioned a couple things where one case in Houston where you have Leotis Johnson from Houston, who is the SNCC leader in Houston, who was arrested on the supposed possession of marijuana and who was given a 30-year sentence. And Ernest McMillan in Dallas, who was given 10 years for supposedly malicious destruction of property. And that, as I said, all these are trumped up charges and their attempts to get SNCC off the streets and from organizing in the state of Texas. And that they're very, very political, and so we are going to try to fight them on two levels. One, the legal, in the sense of raising bond money to get the brothers and sisters out of jail. At the same time, to say exactly what these things are, and this is a type of political repression against SNCC and against Black Militant Organization, and that the fight has to be very much a political one as well as a legal one. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. This time out to Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Jones is standing by. He's hearing Night Call over WAOK. Mr. Jones, good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. This is Luke Hudson.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Hudson.
Right, brother. How you doing?
I'm fine. My name is Joe Jones, the Joe Jones Trucking Company, which I remember reading so much about. Now, under the word of power, power is capitalism. And I think that any organization that is going to try to advise or to lead the black man should have some sort of opportunity to gain capital where they'd be able to help the ones to help them sell. Now, this SNCC organization, the NAACP and all of them, know I had a hard struggle fighting this white power and white capitalists to try to enter into this Interstate Commerce Commission Act, you know, of transportation, which is the second largest industry in the United States, which is mother $1 million is pulled out each year and put in this here. Now, I can't understand why these organizations, when they find that one of them have broke through into this mainstream economy, that they won't come in and sort of help build this up where black people could have capital and could put the proper representative there without violence in this. And this is very amazing to me. This is to help and to train. And in the transportation that I have a franchise that I can enter into each major city and put up a terminal without interchanging with the white man. And all these large companies want this service. They don't care where the money comes from. Just so you got the equipment, the know-how, and the ability to do it. And this way that we're talking about the black man being recognized, it's going to take capital, it's going to take industrial. And this is one chance for them to get in, the SNCC. And I heard that Mr. Offer tonight said that he's going to put Red Brown and Carmichael in jail. Gonna fix a deal or something for him. And I also talked to his office tonight about trying to help the black man and talking with Miss Moore out of Mr. William Wells' office that they said they done all they could do while he was at the vice president for the black man. So to gain this capital. So one time we're asking for integration, the next time we're asking for separation, but we don't try to get no capital in. Capital rules this country. And I don't know, why can't we enter into some of these fields that has a large financial return in it and invest, that I've been all over the United States asking Negroes to invest in it and to build it up, and they refuse to help themselves. And how can you explain that to me?
Well, we think that power in this country is very much money, right. And that that's been true not in the 1960s, but it's always been true. And that the human welfare of people, both black and white in the country, has always been come after the whole question of profits and money, which is one of the things that we think is wrong with the country. And that one of the things that we believe in SNCC is just that it is impossible for power only to be capitalist. That basically, not only do you have a situation of racism against you, but you also that the capitalist system works against the black man in this country, and that it is not in the benefit of black people to join into a system which is basically exploiting them and keeping them down. And that even though SNCC has pushed for in certain areas of the country, for instance, more black businesses and more black-owned businesses or loans to create small businesses, that we don't feel that it's possible for black people as a group, not black people as individuals, but black people as a group, to get any kind of capitalistic system is basically a system which exploits for more and more profits and sets up a political situation of that I'm on the top and I have to keep you down so I can get more and more profits.
Mr. Jones, we want to thank you so much for calling, sir. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and the sad part of our duty is that each night about this time we have to cut off our phone calls. And generally it's always during the second half hour that we kind of begin to warm up to our subjects, and the phone continues to ring many nights, some 15 to 20 minutes after. But if you have a question or a comment at any time that you feel that we can pass on to our guest, remember all you have to do is to drop us a note to Night Call in Pomona. That's P-O-M-O-N-A. That's Night Call in Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. Now, we'll be more than happy to answer your question if we can, or pass your question on to a particular guest. Mr. Hutchins, we have just about a minute and perhaps 15 seconds. I know this doesn't give us too much time, but as a final question from us, do you see us? I understand we have about 30 seconds. I'm sorry, but can you answer in 30 seconds? Do you see any hope for the black-white situation in America?
Well, I think the hope is simply that black people realize the situation that they are in, understand historically and even the present what the white power structure has done to them, and begin to organize for their own liberation and their own self-sufficiency against that system. And that's the real hope of this country, because black people represent the most democratic and progressive element in the country. And that's what black power is all about, us getting together and taking care of business.
Mr. Hutchins, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York. Thank you for being a beautiful audience. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Death at an Early Age, the spiritual and psychological murder of black youngsters in our public school systems, with author Jonathan Kozol. Listen tomorrow night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.